Good evening, good day, whenever it is that you are listening to this. We are happy to have you here at the Believe in Titans podcast. I am David Beauclair of alltitansatsi.com, along with John Glennon, my partner at alltitansatsi.com, and former Titans Broncos cornerback Denard Walker. Gentlemen, everybody staying cool in this summer heat?
Trying, man.
I'm just staying inside. I don't need to work on my tan.
Well, the players are staying inside, I guess, and working out and meeting and doing those sorts of things. But we are into the first full week of the dead period between the off-season program and the start of training camp. On the way out, though, I guess, if you will, Jeffrey Simmons gave us a little bit to talk about when he met with the media on the last day of the team's mandatory mini camp. It was, or at least the last day that the media was out there. It was, I guess you give him credit for standing up and answering questions that he knew were coming and that were not always comfortable questions, but I can't say that he shed a lot of light on his situation and what exactly he's looking for, what exactly he hoped to gain by not participating in the on-field stuff at all during the mini camp. He of course wasn't around during the voluntary portion of the off-season program either. So I'll ask you, Denard Walker, first. Assuming this was a hold in of some sorts, do you think this was an effective way to send a message to management, and or is this an issue that's going to only grow as we get to training camp here?
Well, David, there was a young man that was, let's see, he was in the same position about 4 or 5 years ago by the name of Aaron Donald, who plays for the Rams. And the last time I checked, he did the same thing. He held out training camp that year, and he ended up getting a nice little contract extension. And so yes, that's what players, if they feel like they have to do and hold out, yes, then go ahead and do it. I was reading where he said he alluded to the fact that his goal is to be in camp, but he knows when you look at this team, they just locked up Harold Landry. Of course, AJ is gone. They paid Danico Autry and Bud Dupree last season. So he's basically saying, listen, I want to get paid, and I want to get paid now. And if this is the way he feels like he is going to go about and doing it, I would expect you to not anticipate him being in training camp this summer.
Unless, of course, he gets that extension right at the start of camp. And John Glennon, he has 2 years on his contract still. He's got the fourth year from his rookie deal. He's got the fifth year option, which the team has picked up. This team typically, I guess, hasn't done, at least under John Robinson, hasn't done deals with hasn't done extensions with guys who have 2 years left on their deal. Should Jeffrey Simmons be expecting an extension at this point, or is this unreasonable?
I think he should be expecting it, and I don't think it's unreasonable. It is unusual, both for the Titans and really in the league. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think any of the 2019 guys have been extended so far. Any of the 2019 draft picks in the league, I don't believe, have been extended. And as you said, it's not the Titans' usual mode of operation to give an extension with 2 years left. But with every rule comes an exception. And I think Jeffrey Simmons has to be that exception for the Titans. You know, when you saw what a dominant figure he was on defense last year, how he is sort of the central sort of linchpin to this entire defense, and how ridiculously he has outplayed the terms of his entry level contract. It's not as if the Titans were underpaying him. You know, this is just a typical entry contract. But now, you know, I think you have to recognize what he has done. Recognize that you need to keep your main man on defense happy, well paid. And you have to find a way to make it work, even though there's still 2 years left, because I don't think you want to set that example of not paying a guy who has played this exceptionally well so far and creating any kind of friction there. So, yeah, I think the Titans should do it. I think it should happen before training camp. And I think the Titans can use as leverage the fact that, hey, we could always put this off, you know, Jeffrey. but you know, maybe we'll work on that. Maybe we'll lower the price just a little bit because of that. But I do think they need to pay him.
Yeah, I think in fairness to Jeffrey Simmons, you know, his decision to not take part in any actual on-field activities with the team during the off season. Now, you know, people are going to pick that apart, but you know, we'll start with his contract. You talked about how he's outplayed the terms of his contract. It's 4 years, fully guaranteed at $12.663 million. If he plays the fifth year option, say there is no extension, whatever he plays through, that's another what, $10.4 million. Like, Jeffrey Simmons is doing fine, right? Like, no one's gonna say he's hurting for bread money at any point. But Jeffrey Simmons also knows full well as anybody in the NFL, what one injury can do to you. Now, keep in mind, this was a guy that back in 2019, most people considered him a top five talent. There was some teams obviously had the character question because of the incident that he had off the field prior to starting at Mississippi State. But the bigger issue was the fact that he tore his knee up in pre-draft training in February. And, if you look, the fifth pick in the draft that year was Devin White with Tampa Bay, who got 4 years at $29.3 million. So, you know, if Simmons was fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, I think it's fair to say that knee injury probably cost him $15 to $20 million, probably in terms of over the first 4 years of his career. So, the idea that he wants a contract, thinks he needs a contract right now, it makes sense to me from that perspective that he would say, I'm not going to go out on the field. I'm not going to risk another injury at a key time in my career that can cost me some money. I'm not stepping back onto that football field until I get the deal that I'm looking for. And, you know, he did say the right things in terms of, I want to be here for training camp. I expect to be here for training camp, but that's easy to say. There, you know, he also made it clear that he is getting counsel from several people, an uncle of his, Jason Hatcher, who played 10 years in the NFL, and some, you know, innocuous other members, whether they're family members. He indicated he's going to hire an agent, whatever. He's getting all this input from outside that you figure is going to lead him to say, well, if I don't have my contract, I won't be there for the start of training camp. So it's, Donato, I want to ask you about that. Is it dangerous to have a bunch of people in your ear, do you think? Is it good to have a family member like a Jason Hatcher? Or it, you know, should you keep your advisors, I guess, if you will, kind of small? How do you look at that?
Well, it depends, David. It depends on the individual. The question I would ask, did you have those people there before? If they're new to your inner circle, then I would say get them out, because sometimes if you have too many opinions, that's not good for you as a player. Or when you're talking about different agents or business people, you don't need all of that. Listen, your production is what gets you paid in this business. And when you look at Jeffrey, what he's done on the field, I was reading where last year he had 62 quarterback pressures in 2021. Man, you're talking about as a former cornerback, when you get that kind of production from a player, that becomes your best friend. And if you're a defensive coordinator, you said, listen, I need that because everything starts in the trenches. So he has leverage when it comes to production. But what I don't like, unfortunately, as a former player, we used to always say this, and it's an unwritten rule, but we have to follow it as former players. We don't talk about guys' contract situation. But in this case, when you have leverage, David, you only have leverage so much time in this league. The National Football League is a three-letter NFL stands for not for long. And you are one play away. Look at what's going on in Cleveland with Baker Mayfield. Just a year ago, I was saying, uh-oh, here comes Baker. This is a guy that you would think that Cleveland would be spending $200 million for him. Unfortunately, the way he played this past year is kind of like, uh-oh, now we don't know what's his situation. Now Deshaun Watson in. So it's always changing. So when you're a player, you think about that. What happens if I stay? What happens if I step on the field next year and I end up blowing out my knee again? Are we having talks about contract extension? So you think about those things because you're only one play away. So if you, Jeffrey, I understand when you have leverage, David, but in this case, keep your circle small. Keep the people around you that you had before. Keep them close because what you don't want is a lot of people in your ear. And again, sometimes people are telling you what you want to hear, especially knowing that you have a chance to get paid in this league. And that doesn't come around often.
And John, I'll ask you, you know, we were both at that press conference with Jeffrey Simmons. Based on what he said, did you come away with a clear message in terms of what these folks are telling him?
I don't think that clear was the word that I would describe it. No, as we've all said, exactly. Good on Jeffrey Simmons because he clearly went up there of his own volition. You know, I'm sure the Titans weren't necessarily going to have him scheduled to talk, but he went up there and he answered a number of questions, but some of it, you know, sort of muddied the waters, I thought a little bit, you know, especially kind of the part where he said, you know, I've got a team, you know, to deal with that kind of thing. And it almost sounded as if he was saying, if they think I need a new contract, they'll get back to me almost. And you kind of paused a little bit and, you know, it was more like, Jeffrey, you're the guy here. You're the guy that's in charge. You tell them to go get you a new contract. You don't wait for them. And I know what he was doing. I he clearly wanted to keep the focus on football and good for him for not, you know, getting into the muck right away. But at the same time, yeah, I think everybody, we're still a little bit speculating at this point in time as to exactly the status, but you know, maybe one theory I have is that maybe, you know, the Titans at least have an idea that Jeffrey Simmons, you know, is looking for a new contract. And perhaps they say to Jeffrey, they say, okay, we're willing to work with you. We're willing to talk to you, but we don't have everything in place right now. So, you know, at least don't go AJ Brown on us. You know, don't start skipping out on everything. Don't lose contact with us. Don't start scrubbing your social media. You know, instead, at least show up at minicamp, at least be in the meeting rooms, at least do conditioning work, you know, kind of show face and show faith in us. And if you do that, you know, let's get down to business after that. Maybe we can hammer something out before training camp. That's one guess on my part as to what we saw.
Yeah. And there's no question though, what a Jeffrey Simmons has meant and can mean to this defense, particularly, you know, assuming that he hasn't played his best football yet. You can just go back with this franchise to 2008, the year Albert Haynesworth finished second in defensive player of the year voting. And Denard talks about, you know, that's a secondary guy's best friend. Three quarters of the Titans starting secondary were Pro Bowlers that year because Albert Haynesworth was just destroying offenses up front and quarterbacks just had to get the ball out of their hand. It was a remarkable performance that year in a number of different fronts for him. But I got to say too, when, you know, he's talked about his uncle, Jason Hatcher, before, throughout his career, but it's always been as somebody that he could sort of go to and say, hey, I'm dealing with this. Tell me in your experience what you thought. This is the first time I got the sense that Jason Hatcher is really taking a different sort of role and a guiding force in his career. And it put me of the mind, I wrote this last week, in fact, that if anybody has seen the 30 for 30 on Marcus Dupree, the great running back who had a very short career out of Oklahoma, they were talking about his recruitment and a big factor in that recruitment was Marcus Dupree's Uncle Curly, who really wanted him to go to Southern Miss. And they asked Texas coach Fred Akers, former Texas coach Fred Akers, and this said, you know, did you ever meet Uncle Curly? And he just kind of wistfully smiled and said, there's always an uncle, isn't there? And, you know, it's when these, you do worry when these family members start getting involved in players' business. It feels like that can really affect things in a negative way, and you'd prefer somebody who doesn't have that sort of emotional investment in the player can sort of see the big picture of what's going around the league and whatnot. And I'm speaking, you know, sort of as a, in terms of having a traditional agent just handle that sort of thing for you. But you know, that's, it remains to be seen.
Yeah. I was going to toss in one more thing too. You know, if you think about kind of the court of public opinion on this too, and if you know, and we're thinking down the road here, and if this does come closer to training camp, and if it does appear that Jeffrey Simmons, you know, may not report or may not participate right away, you've got to think the public opinion Titans fans are going to be sitting squarely on the side of Jeffrey Simmons here. I can't imagine that most of the Titans fans are saying, you know, good for the Titans to keep him at only making, you know, $4 million a year. They've done the right thing. They're going to be saying, we need Jeffrey Simmons on the football field. He's the key to this entire defense. And fresh in a lot of people's mind is the fact that, you know, that things didn't get worked out with A.J. Brown and that they had to move A.J. Brown. And the last thing Titans fans are going to want to see is any kind of friction between the Titans and a star player again. So I think that will work towards Jeffrey Simmons. If it comes to it, I think that will work in Jeffrey Simmons' favor as well.
Well, it will bear watching. I assume it'll be quiet now for the next couple of weeks, but July 26th is kind of the starting date for most teams at training camp. When these deals have gotten done, when you're thinking Kevin Byard in recent years, Taylor Lewan, this is when John Robinson has done them, kind of make a splash right at the start of training camp. So everybody can circle July 26th on their calendar as sort of a key date in the Jeffrey Simmons saga right now. Another guy we've talked about quite a bit this offseason, kind of in terms of looking back on his struggles last year, in the moment there following the draft, some of the things he said, Ryan Tannehill, no doubt on the offensive side of the ball, he is a critical piece, as Jeffrey Simmons is critical to the defense. So let's look ahead a little bit. We've talked about the turnover at wide receiver. He's got new weapons at tight ends. You know, how much are we going to see Derrick Henry and how is that going to affect things? So Denard Walker, I guess I'll ask you this for Ryan Tannehill, what does a successful 2022 look like for him, given how much in his situation has changed from his first couple of years with the Titans?
Well, a lot of that's going to hinder on the performance of Derrick Henry. We forgot last year that the King went out right after that Colts game in week 8. And what I like to say about Ryan is not because he's a Texan or he went to Texas A&M. I don't even like him, but he's been one of the most consistent quarterbacks the last 3 years in the National Football League. Now, you go back his time in Miami, the word that comes to mind was abysmal. And when you look at his play in Miami, you saw a player that, again, came out of Texas A&M, was a converted. He was a wide receiver. Let's not forget he played receiver, and then they switched him. He converted him over to quarterback. But it was so many turnovers. That's really what I think derailed his career in Miami, was the turnovers. He had, 75 interceptions in 7.5 years in Miami, and 123 touchdowns. But when I look at his play on the field, and I go back in 2021, I know we look at the games, you know, you go back to the Pittsburgh game when all of the turnovers are dominating Pittsburgh. You go back to the game against Houston. What, Houston came in to Nashville, they won, one game? If I'm correct, was it one? They came in that game just when they had one game. And David Cooley said it. Coach Cooley said it best. that if his team can eliminate the turnovers, then they probably would have won at least two or three games by that point. But you would have thought Tennessee was Houston, and Houston was Tennessee the way that that game kind of transpired. And the reason was he didn't have any of his pieces. You didn't have no Derrick Henry. You look at the running back position that game. Who did you have? Dontrell Hilliard, Adrian Peterson, Deontay Foreman. There was no continuity. Your high guy that game was what, Marcus Johnson? Was the receiver last year? Marcus Johnson, right. Got the big game against the Saints, but he ended up hurting his hamstring. So you saw Ryan forcing, trying to make plays. And I was telling Davey when we was breaking that game down, I said, listen, I know you're being critical on the quarterback because people think that's where it starts. But when you don't have no pieces to the puzzle and those pieces are missing, what you do is you start overcompensating. You start trying to do too much. And we saw that with Ryan last year. You go back to the New England game. Who did he have at receiver starting that game? You had Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, Cody Hollister, and your fourth rounder, Des Fitzpatrick. You think about it. Go back to the Saints game. Your high receiver was Marcus Johnson. There was no AJ. There was no Julio Jones. So what you end up seeing in 2021 was a lot of missing pieces. And unfortunately, that ends up hurting the play of the quarterback. Now, Ron is no Tom Brady, but I'm sure if you put Tom Brady in that situation, the same thing would have happened. But let me just say this, and let me get this off my mind. If you have a healthy Derrick Henry, you have the same king that you had in 2019 and 2020. That's what's going to end up helping this passing game. It's going to help cut in half those interceptions. Because I'm not anticipating if Derrick is healthy, you won't see those 14 interceptions in 2022.
John Glennon, same question for you. What does a successful 2022 look like for Ryan Tannehill?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, you can look at lots of statistics, but to me, the most significant one for Ryan Tannehill is not necessarily the yardage. It's not necessarily the touchdowns. It is the interceptions. It is the turnovers. Because, you know, you even look back at his first year it wasn't as if Ryan Tannehill put up incredible offensive numbers, but what he did in his first two seasons was really keep those turnovers down. Those interceptions, I believe, if I'm recalling correctly, a combined 13 in the first two seasons that he played, and then 14 last year, you know, topped the combination. So that's got to come down. And I do think Ryan Tannehill has a challenge this year because, you know, A.J. Brown, obviously, his top target is gone, and he has a number of new targets and at both the wide receiver spot and at the tight end spot. So I think, you know, I can't say I expect huge change from Ryan Tannehill. If he can boost touchdown production, maybe, even as little as 3 to 5 touchdown passes more than he did last year. More importantly, if he can cut that interception total down, say a handful, say 5 fewer interceptions this year, I think that's a huge step in the right direction. One other stat I'd like to see go up for him last year, yards per attempt, 7.0, very, very low. Maybe the bottom third of the league there. And that was very different from what we saw in the 2019 Ryan Tannehill. So if they can find a way to get open downfield, if Ryan Tannehill can find a way to get more downfield completions, love that go up there. And then finally, I will say about Ryan Tannehill, whatever he does during the regular season, it may not matter. Because even if he has a great regular season and the Titans win another AFC South and get another high seed in the playoffs, if he goes out and has a dud in the postseason, as he has the last two times, no one is going to care what he did in the regular season. They're going to say Ryan Tannehill can't get it done in the playoffs. So, that to me is going to be the bottom line for Mr. Tannehill.
Yeah, to me, like with no A.J. Brown, with no Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, as was the case last year, with no Julio Jones, you know, we've talked about how different the wide receiver group is. I don't think there's any way his overall passing numbers probably look as good as they've looked. You know, this is not a guy who's going to throw for 4,000 yards. He's not going to throw for 40 touchdowns next season. There's just no way. To me, the key will be the fourth quarter. He, you know, we've seen him at times, the 2020 season in particular comes to mind, play really, really well in the fourth quarter, right? That was the year he led 5 game-winning drives in the fourth quarter, six game-winning drives over our five fourth quarter comebacks, 6 game-winning drives that year. But he has trended downward in a couple of numbers in the fourth quarter over the course of his Titans time. His passer rating in the fourth quarter has gone from 123.3 to 102.9 to 87.6 last year. You know, he completed 72.7% of his fourth quarter passes in 2019. He's been down in the 60s the last couple of years. And most notably last year, 5 touchdown passes and 5 interceptions. And similar to his overall statistics, he threw 4 fourth quarter interceptions in 2019 and 2020 combined versus 19 touchdown passes. I think given all the changes to the offense, it's unlikely that this team is going to be blowing out a lot of people. They're going to be playing some games that are decided in the fourth quarter. So if we can see the 2020 Ryan Tannehill in the fourth quarter, a guy who has had 3 quarters to figure out, you know, what a defense is doing to him, what the opposing personnel is, where he can make some things happen, and then go out and make those things happen and win games in the fourth quarter, that will take care of everything else. Whatever his numbers look like statistically, I don't think matters. It'll be more that fourth quarter, take care of the ball there, win games, and everybody will forgive everything else. It's not always the prettiest formula, I guess, but it is a way to win games. Let's do this though. We've talked so much now. Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Jeffrey Simmons, the late great AJ Brown, so to speak. You know, big names on this team. There's 90 guys on this roster right now. There'll be 53 guys on the regular season plus game day elevations and whatnot. Who are guys that are flying under the radar that as you look ahead to this season can play big roles or maybe people should be paying a little more attention to and might surprise somebody? John, I'll start with you. If I pose that question to you, who comes to mind?
The first one that I've been kind of paying a lot of attention to and has been getting some attention because where he's from is Josh Malone. This to me is a really good story to follow. And it's a little bit of a homer pick. I will admit that. You know, Josh Malone went to high school up in the Gallatin, Hendersonville area up there. Obviously went to UT. And this is a guy who most people thought, you know, would be in the midst of a fairly successful NFL career at this point. He was a 4th round draft pick by Cincinnati in 2017, you know, but it has not happened, to this point. He's played in, I think, 15 games over the past 3 years, I believe is what it is. And he's only got 11 catches in his entire NFL career. So certainly, this is a guy who the Titans, they didn't need to reach out to Josh Malone. And I feel like they saw some potential there. They gave this guy a chance. And again, you're looking at a guy who's 205-pound guy who certainly at one point could catch the ball very well. And you look at where the Titans stand at wide receiver. I feel that, you know, they've got 4 locks probably and Robert Woods, you know, Treylon Burks, Kyle Phillips and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina. After that, you know, there's a little bit of a crapshoot for some of the roster spots below that. And so you're looking at Josh Malone competing with the likes of Des Fitzpatrick, Racy McMath, Cody Hollister, Mason Kinsey, some of those other guys. And I think the way that Josh Malone has started this offseason gives him a legitimate shot, at one of those lower tier roster spots at wide receiver. And to me, I think he's a good, kind of bounce back story. He's a hometown story. So I'm going to be interested in following how Josh Malone does come training camp.
Denard Walker, who haven't we talked enough about, or haven't we talked about it or at all this offseason, who catches your attention on this roster?
Well, you know what? They drafted this player is Hassan Haskins out of Michigan, 6'2", 220 pounds. I'm just a big fan of him. I've been watching Hassan. I watched him last year against Ohio State. You talk about one of the most underrated backs in college football. And you talk about what Tennessee likes to do when they run the football with Derek. You can ask the Texans about that when they do the double team down and they run up a lot of up the guts. And that's his forte. And not to mention you have a back in the King. I don't even call him Derek anymore. I don't even know his first name. But when you're talking about you have your best player coming off an injury, what you don't want to do is to run him into a hole early. And you have to understand this, David and John. And I know Derek is a freak of nature, but again, he's getting up in age. He's 28 years old. So you have to take that in consideration. I know now in this day and age, they don't do the two-back system like they used to do back. Who Cleveland used to have, was it Kevin Mack and Ernest Byers. Yeah, remember they both 1,000-yard rushers. And I know when I was at Denver, you know, Coach Mike Shanahan, he had Terrell Davis, Orlandis Gary. You had Mike Anderson. Yeah, Mike Anderson. No one. And then they went out and drafted Clinton Portis and all four of the and Ruben Drones. So they had five. I thought about Mike Shanahan. I thought, you know, he just passes the ball. No, he likes to establish the run. What helps a quarterback when he's struggling? A strong running game. And this is what I love to see. I would love to see how Todd Downing is going to utilize him in the offense. We're talking about Derek with his carries. You know, you alluded to the fact last week about Eddie George. He had in 2,400 carries. But after that season, after 2000, it was like everything went downhill. You know what would help Derek as far as longevity is to get a good quality back in there, young, just like him, tough, resilient. There's no more Darrington Evans. Unfortunately, his durability is kind of what cost him a spot. But again, you got an underrated running back that I thought was second or third round draft round status. I mean, he was a quality running back. So again, I just want to see how Hassan Haskins is going to fit in this offense in 2022.
I'm going to throw out there, member of last year's draft class, inside linebacker Monty Rice, a guy who coming off a season-ending injury, but you know, everybody sort of got beat up on that inside linebacker group at points last year. And Monty Rice started four games, finished three of those four games, and in those three games had at least seven tackles in each of them, averaged eight tackles over those three games. In the game that he was injured, the last game he ultimately played last season, he only played 19 snaps on defense in that contest before he got hurt, but made five tackles in that game. And before that, he was a guy Mike Vrabel had talked about, really impressed him, like in the kicking game as a guy, you know, winning his one-on-one battles, going down, making a tackle that, you know, that sort of showed him this is a guy who has a really high compete level and whatnot. You think about it, you know, David Long starting in his second year, which would have been 2020, put a whole lot of backside pressure on Jayon Brown for playing time and role in that defense and whatnot. And by early last season, David Long was the guy and Jayon Brown was a role player when everybody was healthy. Now Jayon Brown is in Las Vegas with the Raiders. David Long is the guy, but he shouldn't be too comfortable there, because I think Monty Rice is a guy who can really put the same kind of pressure on him. And if David Long gets hurt, and he has had some injury issues, not serious ones, but he's a guy who's missed a few games here and there over the last couple of years, that could be one of those things where Monty Rice could step in there and David Long could have a hard time getting his job back, at least based on the little bit we saw of him last year. So I think that last year's draft class didn't produce a lot immediately. There's, you know, Caleb Farley's going to get his chance this year. Dylan Radins is presumably going to get his chance, but Monty Rice is a guy I think is not to be overlooked as well. So But it's that time. The clock on the wall says we are about done. It goes quickly, but I think this was a lively discussion. We've got more to cover as we go through the off season. So we hope you'll keep coming back week after week and then training camp will be here before you know it. But let's do a quick lightning round, I guess, here on the way out. Real quickly, one sentence, Denard Walker, what do you think is most encouraging about the team right now? And what are you most concerned about as we look ahead to training camp?
Most encouraging is Derrick Henry is back. Like you guys said, he's looking jacked. Most discouraging, your first round pick, Treylon Burks, again, OTAs. Let's get ready for training camp, buddy.
John Glennon, most encouraging, most concerning aspect of this team?
The most encouraging to me is overall health. Treylon Burks is the exception, of course, but guys, a year further removed from ACLs, guys further removed from significant injuries like Caleb Farley, Rashad Weaver, even, Monty Rice made some appearances. So I like the overall health of this team. What concerns me is you still have two open spots on the offensive line, and I don't think you can definitively point to anybody right now and say, that guy's going to be my left guard. That guy's going to be my right tackle. And it's a little bit of a concern that you're in that situation looking ahead to training camp.
Yeah, I will say Austin Hooper, I think, is encouraging. This team traditionally is at its best when it has a productive tight end, and he looks like he could be that productive tight end, particularly a red zone target that this team needs. And in conjunction with that, the most concerning thing with this team to me is that wide receiver group. I mean, you don't know who is going to be number one even at this point. Presumably it's Robert Woods if he's healthy enough, but if he's not, and even you go down the list, there's just no clear cut pecking order there and no established trust with the quarterback. But these are issues we can explore more deeply as we go. But for now, we are going to sign off. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. This is the Believe in Titans podcast. Denard Walker, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, David and John. I'll see you guys next week.
John Glennon, we will talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
All right, everybody. This is David Beauclair. Thanks again for listening.